Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to a Happy, Sad, Confused short. You heard that right. I have created a new category for this podcast, the short version. You might notice in your feed, this is not the customary 30 to 45 to 50 minutes that the interviews tend to be on Happy, Sad, Confused. This is a briefer one, but I decided, you know what? It's Al frickin' Pacino. And my only criteria for this podcast is basically talking to people that I would want to hear myself. And when it comes to someone like Pacino, who doesn't do a ton of press, in fact, this is my first conversation with him in my many years of doing this sort of thing, I decided it was worth my while and hopefully worth your while to listen to a really, you know, it's only 15 minutes long, but there's a lot of insight and humor and pure Pacino we pack into this conversation. Some context for you guys. This was recorded at the Toronto Film Festival, as I said. This happened very much at the last minute. I didn't know I was sitting down to talk to him until a couple hours before. Believe me, I wish I'd had time to prepare for a conversation like this. It was very much by the seat of my pants. But when you get a chance to talk to someone like Pacino, you go for it. People have asked me in recent years, like, who I've never talked to and that I wanted to. And he was pretty much the top of the list, I'll be honest. I need a new one. Another one in that ilk is Warren Beatty, I always say. But Warren doesn't work much. Pacino is working, he just doesn't do a ton of press. In fact, he's working so much he had two films in Toronto. You'll hear us talk a little bit about both of them. Primarily Manglehorn, which is directed by the great David Gordon Green, as well as a film called The Humbling, directed by Barry Levinson. Pacino's still working, still loving his craft. I think he's over 70 now, but was vital and present and in good humor. And I was so thrilled to share this time with him. You know, you never know what you're going to get when you've never spoken to somebody and somebody is the legend that Al Pacino is. But I think if you're a fan of his, you'll get a kick out of this conversation. We go into craft and passion for filmmaking and whether that wanes, not to mention how his kids are keeping him young and in touch with pop culture today, plus a crazy story about how the great Al Pacino could have been, would have been, maybe should have been, no, he shouldn't have been, Han Solo. He was offered the role, said no. You'll listen to that story if you listen to this podcast today. Want to mention a couple other brief things. If you haven't checked out last week's podcast, please do. It went up a little bit late in people's feeds because of some issues with iTunes. Not our fault this time. Simon Pegg, great conversation, talking about his very entertaining new film, Hector, and the Search for Happiness. Check that out. He is awesome. As always, you know, hit me up on Twitter. We've got some really, really cool guests coming up and some exciting news brewing for the podcast. I don't want to say too much now, but there's good stuff cooking for the podcast in terms of who's going to be on it, how you're going to hear it, everything and anything. This is a good time for Happy, Sad, Confused, so I hope you guys are enjoying it. Some really exciting guests that I don't want to jinx because we haven't recorded them yet, but cool people are coming up. This is a conversation recorded at a party, so audio issues, disclaimer. We recorded this at his premiere party for the film Manglehorn. So what you're going to hear in the beginning is Al and I kind of talking a little bit, kind of sort of off mic even. We never really officially start until a couple minutes in. You'll hear that too. We're talking about his film Salome. He actually directed a film. This is a film starring Jessica Chastain that he shot years ago before Jessica did all this amazing work that's since come out. He's directed a film of Salome with Jessica. He's also done a documentary about the Salome and the making of it that is being featured soon in, I think, select cities. So that's what you're going to hear at the outset of this in kind of a very casual conversation, and then kind of the proper interview, as it were, starts, and you'll hear the audio get a bit better. So I want to warn you about that. But enough caveats. I hope you guys enjoy this. This is pure Pacino. Doesn't happen very often. I'd be privileged if it happens again, but I'll take this one for now. Here's a conversation with the amazing Al Pacino.
I thought that the documentary didn't have the gravitas because a lot of the people watching it had
no idea. The context. They don't have...
They don't know Salome at all. Yeah. They don't understand that Oscar Wilde wrote this.
Yeah.
Right. They think of Oscar Wilde as... You know, and they're trying to figure out what is the play, you know. But once you see the full charge of the play...
I remember seeing it when Marissa was in it, right?
Marissa, yeah. That was a Broadway version.
Yeah, I saw that one.
But it's an odd play. It's strange. It goes in... But it's funny, when we made a film of it, that thing that I'm very concerned about, very interested in, is getting a play and a film to merge.
Right.
And trying to get that... Well, something happens in the film, it's just a close-up.
Yeah.
Sometimes things are said in a more intimate way. And you get a sense of the story, and of course she's so amazing. In this. Have you seen a play yet, Salome? Have you seen Jessica play?
I haven't seen her do it, no. I mean, I can only imagine.
Where did you see her do it?
She's the best.
I'm really
in love with her.
Far.
She's...
She goes far. I'm happy about that.
That's great. Oh, sure, sure. Are you ready to do this? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Very much.
All right. Would you mind holding the microphone for us?
Come on.
Is that okay?
Thank you
so much.
Sorry.
Venice happened a couple days ago.
Yes.
You've been racking up the frequent flyer miles.
Yes, you bet. Yes.
And here we are in Toronto. We're Manglehorn and, of course, The Humbling. A lot going on. Film festivals must feel like a comfortable, fun place for you.
Well, yeah. It's just that having two, you know, and in Venice I had two the same day, so I had... Two red carpets in one day.
Right.
You haven't lived till you've done that. That's very unusual.
On my side, I'm not a big fan of the carpets. I can only imagine from your side of things.
Yeah, it's a journey.
Talk to me. We were talking when we sat down a little bit about David Gordon Green, who is such a phenomenal talent and brings out remarkable performances.
He is. He's very special. And I feel the festival is a good place to see this film. Yeah. And I think it suits it. And I said, I don't know if you heard me, the opportunity to see a movie on a big screen. I mean, you only can go to festivals to
see
it. It's
true. It's becoming a rarer, sad
form. It's rarer and rarer, yeah. So it's nice. That's nice.
Are you somebody that still goes to the theater? Do you enjoy seeing films in theaters as opposed to...
Well, I especially like to see them on a big screen.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the movie Humbling that I did, I saw on a small screen a couple of times,
right.
And then when we saw it on a large screen, you see more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just my failing eyes, but also you do see more.
Yeah.
And in these kind of pictures that are sort of survive by their wits, you know, and their nuance sometimes, you catch it. And when you catch it, you hear an audience laugh, and it's...
Do you feel, when you read a script like this, does it have any earmarks of a first-time screenwriter, or were you shocked when you realized it was the first produced work that it would be for
Manglehorn? Which one are you
talking
about? Manglehorn.
Yeah.
Well, it feels like an experiment, which is what I liked about it, because it feels like a David Gordon Green attempt at doing yet another different thing, and I really thought... Why not go with this guy and see what it's like doing this independent film?
Yeah.
Funny, because The Humbling was something I had read Philip Roth novel, and I thought, gee, this is a good movie to make about an actor.
Yeah,
you know, it's a good. The reason I felt good about it is it was what I knew, a world I knew.
Sure.
I grew up in the theater, and it's about a theater actor going this way. So I thought that it might work, and I called Barry Levinson, who then said, you know, he really was interested in it, and we on my take on it too, because I saw a lot of humor in this. You know, the idea, I think Philip Roth wrote about an actor who was sort of falling apart, really, but said he can no longer act. I can no longer write. So it was almost like Philip Roth's point of view was coming from a writer, which
sure.
is writers. But actors don't have that. Actors are not, you know, they are, it's all action with actors.
Right.
That's why they say action.
Right.
You know, you go to it. And once Marlon Brando once said, you know, when they say action, you don't have to go.
It's already happening. It's
just so because they're always saying action on movies. Sometimes they say action before the camera's rolling.
Right.
Because you got to do movies so fast nowadays. And they really are. They should call all movies rushing.
Is that a byproduct of digital cinema, of working
yeah.
where they can just keep rolling and they don't have to worry about changing, et cetera?
No, not only that, it's also money. Because in the old days, you did movies like Humbling,
yeah.
et cetera, like about, studios did them.
Yeah.
And you never thought about all kinds of publicity you have to go through in order for people to be aware that you have a movie.
Yeah.
There's 400 films in this festival.
That's crazy.
And somebody told me, either they're exaggerating, or, but someone told me there's 400,000 submitted films. Now that's just too, that's too far.
It's an embarrassment of hopefully riches.
Well.
One could argue, I suppose. Do
you
connect with what's playing, generally speaking, nowadays? Like, when you see what's playing at the multiplex?
Well, I even got on the internet on Twitter because my young children took me to see, or I took them to see the Guardians of the Galaxy, right? And I was really impressed. I was really impressed, especially with that 70s. Have you seen it?
Of course. Amazing.
70s music. It's amazing.
It's fantastic.
And inventive and so funny and dark and deep. All the things Shakespearean. You know, I was very, very surprised by that.
I have
and
a feeling you're going to get a phone call from Marvel
from
very
Marvel,
soon.
Yeah, I'm ready to go to Marvel.
you've dabbled in the comic book world. Dick Tracy, I'm a big fan of.
Oh,
I mean,
Dick
what
Tracy,
Warren did with that was remarkable.
Oh, Warren, baby, did he? He sort of talked me, somehow cajoled me into doing it,
yeah.
charmed me, because he'd charm anyone.
Yeah.
And before I knew it, it was a fun experience, because there is no character big boy in Dick Tracy.
Right.
So you have to make a big boy. So how do you make a big boy? You make him big, and you make his hands big. That's what we thought. Someone with, I guess, elephantitis or something, and his head big, and you exaggerate it.
Right.
And finally, Warren would say, yeah, I think that's coming up with the head's too big. I mean, still work that stuff. I still wish I had that big head I first got.
You know? Did you grow up with comic books? Were you like a Superman or Batman or anything?
No, I was never into that.
Yeah.
No, my mother worked and took me to the movies when she'd come home from work. So 4 or 5 years old, I was seeing things like The Lost Weekend. I don't know
sure.
if you know.
Yeah.
Ray Milland won
Milland,
the
yeah,
Oscar
yeah.
for it about an alcoholic.
Yep.
And there was one scene where he hides the booze because he doesn't want anyone to know. And when he hides the booze, he was drunk.
Right.
So now he's sober and he needs the booze, but he's forgotten where he's hid it. Sort of like when I drive somewhere in L.A. Where's the car? But when I was doing it at age 6, I was taken very seriously, and the adults would say, "No, Sonny, show us The Lost Weekend." And I would do this scene. I'd open up the closet doors. I'd be frantic. And they would be laughing. And I thought, what's so funny about this? It's serious.
If you'll indulge me, one of those weird, like, I don't know if it's a true story or not, is that you turned down Han Solo way back when? Is that true?
Who's that?
Han Solo from Star Wars, the Harrison Ford
Oh,
part.
I hate to say that, because poor Harrison Ford.
I think he's doing okay.
I mean,
don't
he's
worry.
Doing great, you know. And it was at that time in my career where where, you know, it just came up. I was off at everything when it first happened. I was in The Godfather, you know.
I mean, I heard.
They didn't care if I was right or wrong for the role, if I could act or not act. He's in The Godfather. Offer him everything. So they offered me this this movie, and I remember not understanding it when I read it.
Right.
And so another missed opportunity.
Just think of how your career could have worked out for you. You might have been a success.
I might have been Harrison Ford. That's successful.
No, I think you both did just fine.
He's in some great movies.
Do you feel like does the ability only get finer and more precise? And I mean, do you feel like you're a better actor than you've ever been sitting here today?
You know, it really is true that you know, I was writing a whole paper on this, and that I've seen an actor who remained nameless, who is not with us anymore. But I saw him; he passed on, and I saw him when he was young, do a great performance in a play, and then he became extremely famous. He was inspirational; he inspired me. I was a teenager, and that performance is on. I'll talk to you about it after. It's on Kinescope, and it's one of the great things. It's equal to when Brando did Streetcar.
Sure.
It has that kind of thing. Anyway, he, 30 years later, did it again.
And it was, the fire was gone.
Exactly right. It was crafted, because he is a great actor, was a great actor. And so when he did it, I thought, he's doing all, bless you, he's doing all the right things,
right.
You know, except there's something. And I thought what was missing was when he was doing it, when he was younger, it was connected to his own life. It was connected to where he was at the time. And you could feel the desperation. You could feel him putting his whole soul into this role.
Yeah.
And so you want to keep that alive. And sometimes, you need to, I think, there's a tendency to get too technical or learn your stuff. But I think it's a good idea to look at the roles and say, do I connect to them and throw away what you've learned? I don't know that it's impossible. I don't know what I'm going to do when I'm going to do a role. When I'm playing a part, I don't know. It's on an empty canvas. So I don't know quite what's going to come out there. And I sort of prefer it that way.
So like, when's the last time you were on set and you literally said to yourself or out loud, I'm lost, I don't know what I'm doing here?
Oh, I've said it recently.
Yeah,
I have. I don't want to mention the picture. I don't want to mention anything.
Fair enough.
This interview is going to be about.
I'm curious. You have two teenage children. I'm wondering if they, you mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy. Do you feel like they keep you connected to sort of pop culture nowadays? Like, have you, like?
Well, it's YouTube all the time. Yeah. You know, it's YouTube all over again. It's just there. It is. It's in front of me, and it's, you know, things on it are just so interesting, funny.
Yeah.
And my son is always showing me stuff. Yeah, it's great. And they make films, and they do it on their phone, and they're interesting, and creative, and you see this stuff, and it's kind of it's interesting. At the same time, my daughter does it. My oldest daughter is a filmmaker.
Yeah,
yeah. She was going to be here at the festival, but she's ill in New York. But in L.A., my daughter just writes and stuff, and she's a young. And my oldest daughter and my youngest daughter are writers, and they love it. They love writing. But that doesn't stop her from making these videos and doing all this. It's very influential what you people do here, you know?
Well, it's an age where you can experiment with little cost and little
exactly right. You know, Coppola once said a few years back, he said, you know, with this camcorder when it started, he said, you know what we're going to do one day? We're going to find a 7-year-old girl in the Midwest who's the next Mozart
perfect.
Of
he
film.
Really was,
he saw it.
He did.
He saw it, yeah.
and then, you
can ask me anything.
So have the kids dragged you to a Justin Bieber or Taylor Swift concert?
Well, it not yet. It's tough. You know, when we go across the street, they don't like being the attention. That,
right.
You know, because you get the paparazzi following you.
Yeah.
And they don't like that very much.
Right.
But they want me to get them tickets for the thing.
Sure.
So my daughter's got some group now that I'm sure the audience is familiar with
right.
that she wants. And she, I just say yes, you know, and then we work it out when we're together. When we're 3,000 miles away, I just say, okay, honey, we'll work something out. Yeah, we always
report back to me on how the concert went.
We negotiate and all this, you know. That's it.
Congratulations on two fine pieces of work. And,
thank
you. Enjoy the rest of your
thank
time.
You very much. Nice meeting you.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.